50 some odd years later to look at the fact that we did not know that Bruce Lee had a very sizable cocaine habit from these letters here.
And every day, I practice martial arts.
Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, and I'm here for a special episode. So this is not a normal podcast episode. It's not one of the numbered podcasts. This is kind of a news report, I guess. There's been a big bombshell dropped on all of us hardcore Bruce Lee fans this week in the form of the so-called Bob Baker letters. And I thought, you know, before all those haters and trolls get to it, why don't I talk about it first and maybe try to give some context, put together some thoughts, and we can see where we go from here. So just a quick history lesson for people who might not be familiar. So Bob Baker was technically a grand student of Bruce Lee. So Bob Baker was a student of James Yim Lee. James Yim Lee was one of Bruce Lee's students who taught Jeet Kune Do in the Oakland area. So if you can imagine, in the Seattle area, you had Taki Kimura and that whole group. In the Oakland area, you had James Yim Lee and his students. And in Los Angeles, you had Dan Inosanto and Ted Wong and all of those guys. So James Yim Lee was basically the guy for Oakland, and Bob Baker was one of his students. Now, Bruce Lee was friendly with Bob Baker, and we all know this. Not just obviously because of the letters that just came out, but we also know because Bob Baker was in the movie Fists of Fury. He basically played, I think the character's name was Petrov, and he was the last villain that Bruce Lee fights before he fights the final Japanese villain. As far as I know, Bob Baker passed away a number of years ago. And the big rumor among most of the Bruce Lee fans, and it was pretty much accepted, is that Bob Baker was one of Bruce Lee's drug suppliers. And for most Bruce Lee fans, we were all very well aware that Bruce had a bit of a weed habit, liked to eat hash, that kind of stuff. It was the 60s after all, early 70s. There are only a few people who tend to deny this, but it's pretty obvious that he was doing it, given not just the circles of people that he hung out with, but also we already have evidence of him admitting to it. It was also found in his system at the time of the autopsy, and this is nothing new. Most Bruce Lee fans for the longest time knew that Bob Baker was Bruce Lee's dealer or supplier. Now, as a kind of budding Bruce Lee enthusiast in my teen years, I had already heard this, but always kind of thought, well, how does that really work out? Bob Baker's all the way in Oakland. Bruce is in LA by the time he really starts getting into this stuff, when he's hanging out with Steve McQueen, James Coburn. And so I was like, well, how does the guy in Oakland be the supplier of the guy in LA? And then certainly later when Bruce Lee went to Hong Kong, I was like, well, I don't really understand how Bob Baker could have been the supplier. Boy, was I wrong. So just recently, I think even this week, I got a message from my friend Tony Valenti, who sent me a link to an auction at the Heritage Auction House, where apparently the daughter of the late Bob Baker is auctioning off all these letters that Bruce Lee sent to her father. So, of course, for Bruce Lee fans, we're always excited to see new Bruce Lee stuff, new revelations about things that he wrote or whatever. But I don't think anyone was really prepared for what were in the Bob Baker letters. So when I first started going through the letters, the first few letters, pretty innocuous. They're also written, from what I understand, kind of from the earlier time period. I believe the very first letter that they have for auction, that one was from 1967. So this is still probably very early on in their relationship, and certainly before Bruce Lee became the megastar Bruce Lee that most people think about. So that first letter was pretty innocuous. It was about a surprise party that they were going to have for James Lee. And Bruce wanted to be there at the surprise birthday party for his student, but he didn't want James to know. The second letter also continues on with some, you know, arrangements for the birthday party at a restaurant, and also involving another student, Alan Joe. Pretty innocuous stuff. Still pretty cool. All of us Bruce Lee fans love reading this stuff. Next letter is from 1969. Bruce talks about recovering from an injury. Of course, most people know about Bruce's horrific back injury, which happened in 1970. So this letter was written in 1969. From what I know from some of the daytimers and my conversations with John Little, Bruce injured his back prior to the big back injury. He wrote about it in his daytimers that he had perhaps some smaller yet nagging injuries to his back before the big one happened. And so in this one, he's essentially complaining, you know, about his back. And, you know, hoping that he's going to be back in good form and so on and so forth. So, again, a little bit of insight in terms of Bruce, you know, having some struggles in terms of his health and dealing with injuries. Then there's another letter from October 15th, 1969. And it seems that, and this is something that is well known, Bruce had some financial difficulties, especially after the Green Hornet. It was very difficult for him to secure any kind of regular work. He was basically a Sifu to the stars, but, you know, it wasn't the steady paycheck that he really wanted. He wanted to get into acting and doing film work, perhaps in L.A., but, you know, just kept hitting every single roadblock. So it seems that, you know, in addition to his back injury, he also seems to perhaps need some help. And then the next letter, we start getting into some stuff. It's a thank you letter from Bruce to Bob and basically says, to thank you for bringing me the stuffs, especially the pipe and the painting. Say hello to Beth and family. And again, thank you. So again, Bruce is well known to have had a marijuana habit, whatever. It was the 60s. Not a big deal. And then we get into it a little bit more. The next letter, which was postmarked on the 2nd of February 1970, talks about having a brief but enjoyable time together. Thank you again for this holy stuff. One of the small revelations about these letters is that Bruce apparently called marijuana the holy stuff or holy stuffs. The next letter, which is in March of 1970, Bruce talks about his European trip going to Switzerland, which I believe was with Roman Polanski, and some thanking for suggestions about sending hickory spare ribs by plane. After that, he also, and at the end, he asks if Bob wouldn't mind going with him to get more holy stuffs. And he also thanks him for the papers early on in the letter. Okay. And again, not that much of a big deal, just is what it is. What's interesting is that Bruce was a prolific letter writer. A lot of his letters are in the book, Letters of the Dragon. You can see he, you know, definitely in the days before text message and all those things, Bruce was a very prolific letter writer. But I think one would be hard pressed to find anyone with whom he had written this many letters to. He definitely wrote a lot of letters to his students and to his wife when he was traveling. But I was really shocked at the sheer amount of letters that he wrote to Bob. Clearly, the two of them were very close. Okay, the next letter is from March of 1970, so it's a month later. This, I believe, is before Bruce would have his first trip to go over to Hong Kong to kind of test the waters about making films over there. He says that he's planning to leave for Hong Kong on April 1st and would definitely like to store up on some holy stuff to buy over there and see if you can come up with anything good. Also mentions Coburn and Siliphant and talks about the papers that he got from Bob tasting kind of sweet, okay? Nothing too much of a big deal here. Another letter from March 1970, thanking again for more holy stuffs. And so we start to see a recurring theme here. The next letter in April, so it seems he's writing to Bob at least about once a month around this time here. Quick letter to personally thank him for the wonderful gift. He enjoyed it very much. What that is, we can speculate, but hey, could also be in a pair of nice shiny nunchucks. Interesting here, he says to get some M pills as they give him a tremendous experience. Coburn likes some of them. I'll give them to him when I get them. So what M pills are, I'm sorry, I am the Kung Fu genius. I am not the drug nomenclature genius. Maybe someone below might know what that is. I don't know if that's some kind of prescription pills for his back stuff. I've been told it could be a euphemism for LSD, but what M pills are, the Kung Fu genius is the idiot on that topic. The next one, this letter here is from June of 1970. And he calls him Baker here, Baker, that he says he told Linda to call him and forget about the stuff because I really don't need them in my training. What the stuff is, are we talking about more of the holy stuffs or are we talking about other stuff? We may never know. I cannot quite read his handwriting here, but excessive indulgence in them just isn't my road in Jeet Kune Do. So anyway, it seems that he might be wanting to kind of curb his habit here a little bit. He talks about hurting his lower back from tons and tons of exercises and a sort of punching, and then talks about how he has to keep off some of the endurance work and lay off heavy lifting, but he's going to be doing some stretching. And again, thanks, Bob, for the papers. Lots of papers. I assume those are letter writing papers. Just kidding. June 1970. So again, a lot of these are just kind of one right after the other. Talks about 4th of July plans, saying it's a bad idea for traveling. That is, a mother is coming the following week, and they might have to meet in the middle of July. And before you come down, could you please check with James to see if he has anything for me? Could be training equipment, I assume. Give him a call, and if there's nothing too large, I'll appreciate you bringing them down for me. I know that he got some training equipment from those guys up there. They would make some custom stuff for him as well. And it thanks him for his generous supply of paper, and that would seem to last a lifetime. So apparently Bruce now, at this point in his career, had enough rolling papers to last a lifetime. Another letter in September 1970. He's thanking him for his thoughtfulness, and he thanks him for the, I don't know, it looks like the word gems, can't really read. Again, the letters here, these are all scans. They're obviously not high res because the auction house is trying to sell these things, so they don't want like super high res stuff out there. Looks like gems. These are the greatest gems. Not 100% sure what that is. Could be training equipment. Could be other stuff. Who knows? In any case, pretty innocuous letter. Next letter is also September 1970. This letter is a little bit ripped. It's hard to actually see the whole thing. And he tells Bob, have I ever told you that you are very oriental? Very considerate indeed, my friend. Obviously, in those days, Asians often went by oriental, but that was what it was back in the day, so that's why you see it there. He also thanks him for the generous offer of the loan. Looks like Bob Baker, given his extracurricular business, probably had a little bit of money. Bruce talks about the most horrifying event happening to him, and I believe this has a lot to do with his money issues at this time here, and he sincerely appreciates the help. Obviously, Bruce seems to be writing a lot of letters. He's, you know, at some point he's borrowed a bunch of money. And again, I'm scanning all of these really quickly. Some of these are multiple pages. I hope I don't miss anything super relevant.
3 hours later.
All right. In another letter from May 1970, he talks about that poster that he got, Patience My Ass, I'm Gonna Kill Something. Most people are familiar with Bruce's Golden Harvest office know that he had that on the wall. Interesting that during these financial hardship, this really difficult time of struggle, Bruce was not asking for too many drugs at this time. Seemed to not be able to afford it. All right. And then we have a letter here, June 1971. He already starts talking about Hong Kong deal might come out right. He talks about wanting to create a character for him to get him in there. So obviously, Bob is someone who's helped Bruce out. So Bruce wants to, in a very traditional Chinese way of guanhai or relation, for someone who's done something for you, he wants to kind of help him to repay the favor and get him in a film as well, and seems to already be talking about that. Of course, we know that Bob Baker was in Fist of Fury, and Bruce would eventually get him that role. Interesting thing is that there is a letter from Linda this time to Baker and family on December 1971. Because Bruce is preparing the third script for which he is writing and directing. So we're most likely talking about Way of the Dragon at this point. So this letter here comes from Linda. What's interesting is that in the letter, she talks about that she will be back in the States for about a month and she'll be there to take care of everything. Bruce wants some of that good quality hash. So you can try to get it ahead. And some for me to take back with me. What's interesting is that this letter, this random letter from Linda Lee also, implicates one thing there. Linda Lee definitely committed perjury at the time of the inquest. When Bruce Lee died, there were two life insurance policies on him, one from Lloyd's of London and the other one from an American insurance company. One, I think, was for around 200-something thousand. The other one was for like a mil point three. And of course, at the time of Bruce Lee's death, the coroner or whoever did the autopsy found cannabis in his system, which technically was not allowed under the agreement of the insurance policy. And so The insurance policy was open only 3 months before Bruce Lee died. And so naturally, when they found that out, they wanted to know if Bruce had used cannabis prior to getting that insurance policy, because one of the questions on the questionnaire was whether you use drugs. And Bruce said no. And then 3 months later dies with drugs in his system. So they had to put Linda under oath and ask her. And she said that she was not aware that Bruce had any prior cannabis or drug use before that time of that insurance policy. And here we are a few years back. Before that, clearly she knew about it. And so she's implicated. So this letter also essentially exposes Linda Lee as having committed perjury during that inquest. Okay, number of letters here. I'm going to, rather than go through all of them, I'm going to start going through the ones that have probably gotten the most attention online. Another letter from Linda talks about getting the house in Kowloon Tong. Linda writes in this letter, which is from June of 1972, that Bruce wants for you to see if you can get some coke, just to see if you can, and then we'll figure out how to send it. All right, so this is probably the biggest revelation. Most people knew that Bruce was taking taking weed and taking hash, and which is kind of very understandable for the time of the 60s. No one knew about the cocaine, even yours truly. This is probably the biggest bombshell of all of these letters here, that it seemed from the sheer amount of letters in which it was either Linda or Bruce requesting cocaine quite directly. They weren't using any coded language. It was pretty straightforward. That Bruce had a pretty sizable cocaine habit. And this is perhaps the biggest shocking thing for people who are Bruce Lee fans. Obviously, the man's been dead for 50 years. We want to let the guy rest. But these are things that we didn't imagine were going to come out. And so as a hardcore Bruce Lee fan, obviously, you know, I'm old enough now to be able to separate people's behavior from their accomplishments because legacies are complicated. And if Bruce had a drug problem or if he was abusing drugs, well, this is really a personal thing that he'd be struggling with. Now, does this change how we look at him? Well, that question's going to be answered differently for everyone, right? Obviously, people who are Bruce Lee haters and trolls are going to be like, yeah, see, Bruce is just some kind of, you know, druggy or cokehead or whatever they want to use. And other people who are huge Bruce Lee fans or whatever are probably going to say, oh, these letters were forgeries, and they're going to try to deny it. You know, it's not up to me to tell you how you need to think about this, but this is information. I mean, big part of Bruce Lee's philosophy of his Jeet Kune Do was to honestly express yourself and to look at the truth right in the face. And so here we're faced with that 50 some odd years later to look at the fact that we did not know that Bruce Lee had a very sizable cocaine habit from these letters here. Another letter from October 2nd, 1972. Linda writes Bob about sending the shipment. And so, you know, it was pretty clear that Bob Baker, despite the fact that, you know, he really was Bruce Lee's drug supplier, not just when they would meet each other, but Bob Baker was sending stuff through the mail to Hong Kong pretty regularly. Pretty ballsy move, although, perhaps a little bit easier to get away with in the 70s. We have another letter here from November 1972, written by Bruce. His handwriting seems to be a little bit messy. Normally, his handwriting is really quite clean. Talking about the shipment. So let's go into the weeds about the letters that have really caused the most amount of controversy. Letter here from December 1972. So you have to imagine this is post Way of the Dragon, for those of you who are looking at the timeline. So Bruce is already a bona fide star. He had his three big films come out. He has not yet started doing Enter the Dragon, and he did the, you know, those principal fight scenes for Game of Death already. So when you imagine Bruce along the timeline, when you hear this story, I mean, this is kind of peak Bruce in terms of his stardom in Hong Kong. Bob, airmail me some Coca-Cola. Do it the way you can. I sincerely feel, in other words, whatever. Be cool. Don't the package, some procedure, Wungan quality. What can I say? This letter is written like sideways. You can definitely see that Bruce is not taking the time to use his normal crystal clear handwriting. One of the things that is also pretty obvious through these letters is that Wungan, the butler, it was the butler all along, The butler was kind of the fall guy. So Wung An being Bruce Lee's manservant butler, I believe Wung An was related to the domestic helpers that once serviced his parents and his family when he was younger. They were sending these shipments in Wung An's name, meaning that if these things got caught, it was kind of the butler who would take the fall for all of these things. Not necessarily the best. You know, for me, I can deal with the drugs. we are adults here, but putting it all on the butler, someone who probably loved Bruce Lee a lot, was a little harsh. We have another letter here. This is one of the controversial letters. The date is illegible. It's a late 72, obviously. It's written in that very terrible writing, like the last one. So you can kind of see in my opinion, a bit of a decline. It's not written on proper letterhead. It's written very fast and indicative of someone who is probably struggling with stress and definitely some kind of drug abuse. Bob Cooley sends some coke. How's everything? Stoned as hell. And working on an upcoming character, some coke would help in the formation of what I want to create. And looks like it says to my big brother or to something big brother. Not very clear. Definitely, you know, as someone who's seen a lot of Bruce's handwritten stuff, doesn't look like Bruce's finest moment. Then we have a letter here which kind of, you know, as if the previous other letters were not obvious enough, Bruce literally spells it out in this one here. My jaw dropped to the ground when I read this one here. So Bob, and let me see where the time is here. So this is, again, late 72. So a lot of these almost week to week, he's asking for more. Maybe it's not coming in fast enough, or maybe he's using it right away. Bob, I'm planning to come to the States in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. But can stay for only a week. And it's very organized here, like an outline. Subsection A. Regarding the goods, you can send them in a package addressed to Mr. Wung An at Golden Harvest Studios, 1412 Tongying Building, 100 Nathan Road, which, by the way, is not there anymore. It's actually now a mall, like most things in Hong Kong. The goodie list can be 1, coke, in parentheses, in large amount, 2, acid, in fair amount. 3, hash or grass. The former can be more than mole, while the latter, even cleans, very sloppily written, very uncharacteristic of how Bruce Lee normally wrote. Ask for it to be carefully packed. As to what you put the above with, you know better. Inside books, clothing. So obviously this stuff is being carefully packed, and this is something that Bob Baker has a lot of experience doing, and obviously at this point they've done it a number of times. Also, when I come, I would like to get more goodies ready for shipping, including finding a really classy derringer. And it's been reported around this time, Bruce was suffering from a lot of paranoia. Now that we know that he had a pretty sizable cocaine habit, it makes a lot of sense where the paranoia was coming from. And he was rumored to not only have a belt buckle knife that he went everywhere with him, which he apparently also threatened Lo Wei with, but also to be carrying a gun with him wherever he went around. Obviously, his fame had gotten to a point where he would be mobbed everywhere. And if you compound this, most likely with some kind of paranoia due to the cocaine use, you can start to see here. We're really looking now at Bruce Lee. This is December. We're looking at Bruce Lee in what would be the last 7-8 months of his life. And it's not looking good. So Bruce is clearly having struggles with his habit. And there's also some math on the back of the of this letter here, perhaps for the cocaine and the amount. He also asks on the back of this letter here in the PS, he goes, do you have access to any psilocybin? If so, send together with the other stuff and a letter with how to take it. He read about it in a book. And say hi to Beverly and the kids. So, awkward and weird, right? By the way, is there this new designer drug you can get for me and say hi to the family and kids? What's also interesting is obviously these letters were released supposedly by Bob Baker's daughter. Bob Baker had been passed away for a while. And, in an attempt to make some money, she wants to auction all of these things off. And given the, well, the sheer amount of information here. This is, this is quite the bombshell. And from what I can tell, the auction's going on for about another 8 days at the time of this recording. And they are already starting to, it seems that they are fetching more and more on there as well. Really quite mind-blowing. We have another letter here about the quality stuff that he's sending. And so what is the takeaway here? Takeaway is that in addition to weed and hash, which we all kind of knew Bruce was taking, it looks like Bruce had a relatively sizable cocaine habit. That has been made clear. That's not something that even the best and most respected Bruce Lee researchers really knew. Another letter here written March 1973. So we're now getting into, this would be the time he's shooting Enter the Dragon. So we're really getting into the final few months of his life. Bob, just wanted you to know that Linda had yesterday the additional money you have requested. So I guess he's sending him some money. I had a hard day, a really hard day. You take care of yourself and the family. By the way, I'll be waiting for the 1 ounce of H oil I have ordered from you. Send it as soon as you can. Is that hemp oil? I don't know. Would be the most innocuous thing he's requested in a long time. Another letter, March 29th, from this time from Linda. And Bruce is in the midst of shooting. This would be Enter the Dragon, working very hard. Well, I forgot about your making money out of it, the last orders. Linda talks about buying a gram measurer. And enclosed, you will find the $500 for the amount of C you quote that Bruce can get. I'll measure it, the quality that you guys sing. That goes without saying. Plus the quality Bruce himself will have to judge. I hope you will send him the mostest along with 1 ounce of H oil and or whatever. Hello to Bev. Bruce also says hello, Linda. So Linda's clearly implicated and had full knowledge of Bruce Lee's drug use, which went way beyond marijuana. And she was even buying a scale to measure these things. So she was very much implicated in Bruce Lee's more hardcore drug use. What can we make of this? Well, clearly, there are a lot of things about Bruce Lee we didn't know, given even, you know, all the things that have come out in all the years. This, I think, is a real big bombshell. Now, like I said, people who are already kind of haters of Bruce Lee are going to use this as a chance to attack him or whatever. And that's normal. As we all know, there are no famous martial artists who have ever used cocaine. What does this mean? I mean, drug addiction is a major thing. I definitely feel, I mean, of course, this is just me giving my opinion. Obviously, I don't have any skin in the game here, but given the sheer amount of letters where he's just constantly requesting more and more and more, it seems that weed and hash was probably the least of Bruce Lee's uses, or I should say the least of the problems he had. Obviously, during Bruce's time, and I talked about this recently with John Little, his time in Hong Kong, he had a very difficult time keeping weight on. It had been kind of hypothesized that had something to do with, him working really hard and sweating, and his body, his percentage of body fat went down. This is something, again, I talked about with John Little. But now, given the fact that we know that he had a pretty regular cocaine habit, that puts new light on it, that perhaps he had a hard time maintaining weight because of a pretty sizable cocaine habit. I mean, look at Iggy Pop, right? And you see Iggy Pop's body, and then you start to go, I think I start to see a common thread here among hardcore cocaine users. It's about, in whole, it's about 50 letters. Matt Polly, the person who made the most recent biography, he tweeted about this, talked about nearly 50 letters between Bruce Lee and Robert Baker have been put up for auction. A WikiLeaks level dump. Definitely, this feels like we just got a WikiLeaks level dump on Bruce Lee. A couple points here. One, Bruce refers to marijuana as holy stuff. There's a previously unknown mistress named Teresa. I didn't catch that, but again, I just kind of quickly scanned it. Not very shocking. We know that Bruce had a number of mistresses. Like, it is what it is. And Baker was supplying with Bruce with hash, coke, and acid. And what really blew me away was just the brazenness of sending that stuff through the mail and using the butler as the scapegoat. The other big revelation for me was the fact that Linda was more, I mean, we would all understand that she knew this was going on, but the fact that she almost seemed to be part of or was part of the shipping and arrangements of this stuff also means that she has not been very forthcoming. Obviously, if you have a chance not to talk about these things, you would not talk about it. But she did very clearly commit perjury during that inquest. On a personal note, I just want to say I'm happier that I found out about this now. I mean, I became a Bruce Lee fan when I was 8 years old, and for me, he's been always been an inspiration. As I got older, the way I looked at him changed. As a kid, when you're 8 years old and you see him in those films, it's the fantastic, epic way that he looks on the screen and the way that he fights and his charisma and everything that, you know, makes you want to emulate this kind of awesomeness. As I got older and started to get more into martial arts, I started to appreciate more about the things about his training, that he had a very forward-thinking way of looking at martial arts in the 60s, already doing a lot of things that are very commonplace nowadays, training with boxing-type equipment, using kick shields, focus mitts, heavy bags, moving in a more kickboxing-style frame, addressing the problems of traditional martial arts and their efficacy in modern fighting, and understanding the different ranges of combat and things like that. Bruce was definitely the pioneer of these things. Now, as he started to hobnob with celebrities and was trying to break into that, obviously he was trying to fit in. And it definitely seems that introduction of more hardcore drug use happened in the late 60s as he's hanging out more and more with these kind of Hollywood types. And in my estimation, from the number of letters and the types of drugs that were being sent, his drug habit seemed to start to go off the rails when he was in Hong Kong. Because now he had the money to really start using these things in regular amounts. And so that I find a bit shocking. If Bruce liked to smoke pot or take hash to kind of calm down in his very stressful life, I think everyone could have understood that. But I think most people are really shocked that he was using cocaine. And let's not forget that cocaine didn't really become a huge designer drug, at least from what I understood, until a little bit later in the 70s. So Bruce was apparently a pioneer of many things. That's all I have to say about that. For me, this doesn't change anything about the legacy of the man. It gives more context into why his behavior seemed to go a bit off the rails, especially during that time when he was kind of at his peak stardom in Hong Kong. In some ways, it makes me pity what he was going through, and in other ways, it makes me understand that a lot of the problems he had going on in his life were self-created. What do you think about this? I'd be very interested to see what you guys think. For me, I take a very neutral stance. It is what it is. As Bruce Lee fans, we have to be open and honest about this stuff, and I don't think it makes any sense to bury our heads in the sand and pretend like this doesn't exist. Does this diminish who Bruce Lee was or what he did? I don't know. Personally, as someone who's never tried those kind of hardcore drugs, I can imagine, wow, you were able to do all those things and you were on all those drugs? I don't know. Maybe that elevates what he was able to do. Maybe it's more understandable. And so let me know what you guys think. And I just wanted to talk about it, get a little bit off my chest. And I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a kung fu genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seekung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your kung fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the kung fu genius is the drug idiot. I feel like Bill Clinton before he had to admit about Monica. And this isn't even my thing, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even do this shit. Yeah. But I'm doing Bruce's heavy lifting for him.
Whoosh.
Hope they never have to f***ing do that again. All right.